Good evening, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Springfield lawmakers scare up new funding to prevent a zombie transit system.
This is something that is urgent. It is urgent for a population that is in dire need of access to transportation.
In a marathon final day of the fall veto session, legislators pass a revenue and reform measure for transit, plus a clean energy bill and an effort to stymie aggressive immigration enforcement.
I look forward to meeting with that judge to show her exactly what's happening and the extreme amount of violence perpetrated against law enforcement here.
But attorneys for the feds aren't looking forward to it, getting an appeals court to block an order for the head of Operation Midway Blitz to make daily court appearances.
Donald Trump, over the last 29 days, has spent more time talking to Hamas and to the Chinese Communist Party than to Democrats on Capitol Hill who represent half the country.
With no end to the shutdown in sight, Illinois and other states sue to ensure SNAP benefits keep flowing. Plus, a second-degree murder conviction for the former sheriff's deputy who shot and killed Sonia Massey after a 911 call. And it might feel early, but candidate filing is underway for the March primary election.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Madison Saavedra from Block Club Chicago, Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, freelance journalist Brandon Pope, and Olivia Olander, also from the Chicago Tribune. Thank you all for being here. Let's get right to it. So, Rick, when the House dropped its version of the transit bill late on Tuesday night, did not get a warm reception from the governor or Senate Democrats. What changed to get it over the finish line?
Well, I think everybody was talking about it was the governor basically pronouncing this thing is not going to fly.
Right.
And you actually had some of the Democrats saying this thing needs leadership. And truly, it was a matter of Pritzker pulling everybody together, and not just the House Democrats and Senate Democrats, but also very powerful interests in organized labor who have a big say over where's the money coming from and where does it go. And frankly, I thought they crafted a pretty clever package to kind of navigate a number of hurdles and special interests without vastly affecting people's pocketbooks.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we saw, you know, proposals back in the spring for this online delivery tax.
We were getting resigned that we were going to have to even, you know, it's not even clear about whether, I believe, that the fares are going to stay the same.
Right.
So, but we're all gearing up for pocketbook, we're going to pay more, we're going to pay more. Now, I mean, unfortunately, tollway users are going to pay more, but it is money that goes to the tollway, not to transit.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, Olivia, a lot of that money, you know, there's from the fuel tax, there's road fund interest, there's new tolls, you know, for sort of those capital projects. Labor unions, they often don't like seeing, you know, transportation, highway-related revenue get diverted from things other than roads and highways. So, you know, what got them on board there?
Yeah, as Rick was saying, this was a pretty creative package. It was a package that moved some money essentially from roads into transit, from the fund that would normally go to roads into transit in a couple of different ways. One of the provisions in it was this tollway change. It's a higher toll, and that money goes straight back into the tollway. That keeps some money in roads, even though it's just the tollway, as opposed to, you know, this larger road fund. So I think that really helped probably get some of the unions on board with it, since it's still allowing some of that work, but also ultimately it is redirecting a lot of money to transit and to Chicago area transit in particular.
Yeah, and there are some downstate lawmakers that aren't so happy.
I was just going to say, and that is one of the, I think, downsides of this, is that this kind of runs counter to some of the financial distribution that has gone on in the past. And I almost, now obviously the bulk of the mass transit, the bulk of the population is in northeastern Illinois, but that having been said, I just wonder if this also kind of further politically cuts off Democrats from downstate, an area that they used to enjoy great popularity and it is now just ruby red.
Yeah, and I mean, you've heard from lawmakers supporting this bill saying, look, for every dollar you invest in transit, you get this massive economic boon and it's shared statewide, but, you know, those sorts of economic cost-benefit impact sort of studies can be hard to explain to in a political setting.
Absolutely, and you know, there are transit districts downstate and they do have capital costs and capital needs. And up here, we tend to forget about them. And in this case, by further cutting off their share of funding, I think that's another sign we're forgetting about them.
Yeah, you know, one of those proposals, Brandon, that ended up getting dropped was this, you know, tax on things like tickets, Lollapalooza saying it might jeopardize the festival being in Chicago at all. How much do you think things like that are just sort of bluster, and how much actually gets through to lawmakers?
Yeah, you know, look, when they presented the ticket idea, it felt like kind of like shooting in the wind a little bit. When I heard it, I was like, how does this work? You're saying with every ticket you purchase, you pay an extra fee that's also a CTA pass for you?
Mm-hmm. But I thought that was clever.
It's clever, but how do you make it work?
Well, it's like, you know, Ravinia, you'd get a free
true,
metro ride.
True. So maybe you can do that for CTA.
There's ways to make it.
I'm actually kind of surprised that did not advance. The entertainment tax, though, with Lollapalooza raising issue over that, it did feel a little bit like, come on, guys, with all the prices you raise, you've got the money,
yeah.
Right? Come on.
I was going to say, it wasn't just that fee. It was also a potential tax on streaming and all sorts of concerts,
right. Yes.
Entertainment. I think that maybe would have made some people
unhappy.
That'd
get a lot of people upset. Yeah.
It's not in the bill.
7% tax on your Hulu subscription, you know, might not go down so easily.
Plus the delivery cost, too. They're talking about $1.50 tacked on to your delivery drivers. I mean, that's
right.
You're already paying a lot with all those extra hidden fees.
Yeah, that's from back of the spring, and people hated it then.
Exactly.
Well, you know, and obviously there was this huge fiscal cliff here, although it was revised somewhat down, but still $230 million.
Yeah, right,
not
but we go from 750 to, then 220. But they're saying that cliff would still be back next year.
Right. So they clearly had to act. But I mean, you know, Madison, if you're the average bus or train rider, are you really aware of the severity of the situation necessarily? Or is this more of sort of an abstract conversation that folks are having?
I think it's abstract up until the point where people start noticing their buses showing up even more infrequently than they already do. However, I will say I do think there has been more of a public outreach and trying to raise awareness that there is this big, fiscal cliff. Granted, that phrase fiscal cliff can also probably go in one ear out the other, not really understanding what that means. But I do think that it has very real implications that once people kind of get to the other side of that conversation, like, oh, this really means that a red line train is going to show up every 15 minutes, every 20 minutes. Like, no, that affects my day-to-day life. Maybe I will call my state representative and give him an earful about what I think.
Yeah. There were a lot of transit advocates who were passing around flyers and different mailers and things like that. And it was interesting. There's a nice lady in my building named Mary. She tries to get my, thoughts on the news and what's going on. For a long time, she was asking me, so what's going on with the buses? Are you going to have them in the future? I hear it's going to go away.
Yeah.
So I think like the doom and gloom that some lawmakers are painting out there, like, it's over, we got to do this, was kind of getting over to everyday people. Now they finally did something about it. Yeah.
And I think it's worth saying that the CTA has said with an investment of this size, they could make transit not just like okay, but
right.
better. Like they've right. said that they're aiming for 8-minute headways on every line. I mean, we don't have a lot of details yet. They haven't said like that this particular package will get them there right here, right now. But
yeah, I want to see this world class transportation.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, I think
Please.
We all do.
It's still not New York.
Please.
Yeah. But it was interesting too that talking about that fiscal cliff, the fact that it was revised so sharply downward that it would have sort of pushed off the worst of the cuts. There are a lot of folks worried that that would take the pressure off of lawmakers, but it seems like they still felt the heat on this one.
Yeah, they definitely felt the heat from advocates, from unions, from I think some very passionate Democrats in the General Assembly who felt that this was really important. They're saying that they can have something that's better. And I think to Madison's point, maybe people would notice that in the future, whether they'll think back and attribute it to this moment, this day, probably not, but we'll see.
Yeah, you're waiting to see us have Tokyo-style trains, that beautiful.
That's the dream right there.
Right. We'd all love it. So
maglev going down State Street.
That's right. From your lips to God's ears. Let's see. All right. Well, there was another big item under consideration. It's been kicked around for a while, this clean energy measure. Tell us about that.
Yes. So this measure was, a lot of things are in this bill that's now sent to Governor J.B. Pritzker's desk, and I believe he has said that he is planning to sign it. The big debate on this bill was essentially Democrats and advocates who were saying this is going to save money in the long term because of how it will make wind and solar more efficient. It's going to store some of that, allow the state to be able to store some of that energy in a way that will eventually bring costs down. But then you had a lot of skeptics, a lot of Republicans who said, this actually has a little surcharge that it's going to bring to ratepayers, and in the short term, it's going to bring costs up. So that was the kind of the argument that we saw between the two sides that took up a lot of the debate. But on top of that, it also has a bunch of other stuff. Nuclear moratorium lifted, incentives to weatherize your house to make it more energy efficient. There's a lot of stuff in here, but I think it all came down to savings and when will it actually bring savings.
Yeah, but it's tough to tack a charge on at a time when energy costs are already higher.
Well, particularly for downstaters than the Ameren district because of the way that the rates were calculated for them. And I think a lot of downstate lawmakers were kind of looking for Springfield for some relief there. And instead, you have this component coming on.
Yeah.
And then, you know, plus look at the whole idea, we're going to be phasing out coal and gas emission. If that phases out, is there enough energy to sustain what's going on?
Yeah.
So this is still a kind of this ball is moving rapidly.
Building the plane as we fly it.
Exactly.
Well, there was also a measure preventing immigration agents from making courthouse arrests, letting people sue if their rights were violated during civil immigration arrests. How enforceable do you think those measures are, you know, when we're talking about federal immigration agents here?
Well, that's the real big question here is, you know, this legislation kind of was trying to establish courthouse safe zones, set up directives for hospitals and higher education as well on how to deal with these incursions by ICE or Border Patrol. The argument is, and it has not really been adjudicated here, because there's another group that was actually advocating for state prosecution of federal agents that violate state laws.
Right.
And there is a constitutional provision that does allow for that, but it's been, you know, basically hundreds of years kinds of thing. And, you know, it's a matter of testing these things in court. And even Don Harmon, the Senate president, was like, we know we're going to get challenged on this,
right,
but we're trying to fight back. But you see what the Supreme Court has been doing with its conservative majority is kind of deferring to the powers of the presidency.
Yeah.
And the supremacy clause immunity that federal agents have is only supposed to exist if they are performing their duties and no more. And if they go beyond that in trying to, quote, perform their duties, that's where a liability issue exists.
Yeah, I think we may have one more case for Attorney General Raul to be taking up in the near future here.
More than many.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, well, Madison, we heard a typically frosty back and forth between Governor Pritzker and DHS Secretary Kristi Noem, with Pritzker asking for a pause in immigration enforcement on Halloween. What did Noem have to say?
She said absolutely not. She called the governor's request shameful during a news conference yesterday. And in fact, I think she kind of doubled down saying, no, we will be in full force over the weekend, saying that what federal immigration agents are trying to do is protect children from violent criminals, which the governor did not mince words in trying to say that's absolutely not what they're doing. They're not going after the worst of the worst, according to the governor and many other critics, saying that federal immigration officials are needlessly targeting individuals that have no criminal record, possibly conducting illegal arrests and detentions, and also detaining U.S. citizens,
right,
who are, you know, possibly impeding their efforts, or they've, you know, alleged that assaults on immigration agents have skyrocketed, and that's where some of these detainments have come from. But Secretary Noem said there is no pause. She wouldn't even really answer when Operation Midway Blitz might end. She said, we're not going to talk about it. We're going to keep going until we clean up the streets, essentially.
Yeah. Well, you know, and there was also the case this week with federal prosecutors pressing charges against six protesters. Mm-hmm. This is in connection with a demonstration outside of ICE's Broadview facility. And there's several folks involved in local politics caught up in this.
Yes. Yeah. This includes a congressional candidate who's running in the 9th District, somebody running for Cook County Commissioner. It was six individuals who were being charged with these conspiracy charges, so conspiracy to impede or injure a federal agent, essentially. And yeah, it stems from this one protest where they're alleging these individuals blocked a car, they were banging on the hood, somebody inscribed the word pig on the car. However, all six of these individuals have stood by that they were expressing their First Amendment right to protest and that this is merely political oppression of your opposition, you know, according to them. So I will definitely be interested to see where this case goes and if it affects any of their campaigns. Right. Although one of them, Kat Abu-Ghazaleh, who's running in the 9th Congressional District, I know she has actually raised a lot of money since this has happened, you know, from supporters. You know, it's been a really big news bump for her. And I'm sure others are probably also experiencing that kind of a rally around support this candidate who I already supported.
And she's calling this political persecution. And it's fascinating that what she's charged with here is conspiracy.
Right.
Which is the same charge that the January 6th rioters were charged with. So it raises so many questions that we had to wrestle with on First Amendment. Mm-hmm. Are we now saying protest action is conspiracy to commit a crime?
Right. Yeah, organizing a protest,
right.
That's a conspiracy.
And then to what degree? That video that we just played earlier is going to be crucial in the case. Mm-hmm. The actions described, you don't quite see those on video to the same degree, and the accounts of everyone who was on the ground differs strongly from what we're hearing, and that's happened before too, right? So this case is going to be very interesting, but seeing the conspiracy charge was really eye-raising.
Mm-hmm. I will say some of them are also individually charged with impeding or assaulting a mm-hmm. federal agent in addition to the conspiracy
yeah.
charge.
Yeah. I'd just like to see when they get dropped.
I'm sure they would too.
How many times have we seen this and it gets all the attention?
Right.
And it's, okay.
Well, and especially when we saw, you know, the National Guard roll into D.C., there were all sorts of attempts at, you know, getting indictments of folks, and, you know, federal grand juries said no to a lot of them.
Right.
So that, you know, this could well fizzle out as well. Well, earlier this week, Border Patrol Chief Greg Bovino, he was ordered to make daily court appearances before a federal judge. We heard in that clip earlier, he said he was happy to do it, but federal attorneys were not. They got an appeals court to block those appearances. Brandon, do you think, you know, those daily check-ins, or even if there's any regular check-ins, might have tempered some of the aggressive enforcement tactics we've seen?
I am not sure that would be the case, because we haven't seen any signs yet that this administration or those who are on the ground here for this Operation Midway Blitz are actually that, you know, really care that much about what a court says or what a judge says, right? And that's just been the tone from this administration, even in 2016, right, and going forward. However, it's once again that same hamster wheel we see. A court tries to, you know, step in, then there's an appeal, slow down the process, mm-hmm. maybe goes up to the Supreme Court, they rule in Trump's favor, and we go on again to the next one, right? And
yeah.
So it's just a constant hamster wheel at this point. You have to wonder what the power of the judicial at this point isn't even there anymore.
Well, now, of course, that just is for Bovino appearing
yeah,
daily.
Right.
The other TRO that the judge has still exists out there. My hope and belief was that he would have to show up every day, would have to, because Judge Ellis was very, you know, let's say...
unhappy.
Yes. Thank you. That's yeah. a good word.
She chided him.
And, but, I mean, but truly one of the issues in this whole Operation Midway Blitz has been lack of accountability from the side of the Department of mm-hmm. Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. And again, the false statements and misrepresentations that they provided to back up their cases in court
mm-hmm.
that
yeah.
have been the judges find fault with. I had hoped that this would have been some way to, under even the threat of contempt
yeah.
for violating the restraining order on protesters and journalists and throwing tear gas canisters like they're Halloween candy,
yeah.
I thought, you know, this might have had some real effect. But now that is gone.
The argument of the appeal is interesting, too, that it's arguing basically that if he were to show up in court every day, that'd make him a target,
right? Because
people would know where he's going to be.
So Dirksen Courthouse has pretty good security.
You would think, there's also some other ways around that
right.
that they could figure out, I'm sure. So we'll have to see how it plays out.
Well, and, you know, to that point about body cameras, you know, we heard the judge say body cameras are your friend. If you're, you know, if these immigration agents are trying to claim all sorts of, you know, assault or people impeding them, if they have documentary evidence, that could actually help them out in some of these instances.
Right, and a lot of the videos that we've seen when it comes to these arrests and detainments are they're one-sided. They are from the protesters. They are from neighbors who are trying to capture this to the best of their abilities. And when we do see videos from federal immigration officials, they tend to be very edited, somewhat cinematographically, like a movie trailer, usually posted to social media, not necessarily something first person direct like a body cam. So I very much look forward to seeing that hopefully be implemented, and any court cases that come from some of these arrests, I'm sure that is going to be crucial.
Yeah. Well, another big case this week, Brandon, former Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson convicted of killing Sonya Massey, who called 911 during a mental health crisis. Were you surprised to see Grayson take the stand in his own defense?
That's usually a move that lawyers don't advocate for, so it was surprising. But look, at the end of the day, I think everyone who saw that really awful video, you know, can feel for the family. Recently, the mother of Sonya Massey said that she talked with the family of Sean Grayson, and Sean Grayson's family apologized. So there's some healing happening from this, which ultimately is what you want to see. Obviously, you know, a verdict like this doesn't do anything to bring Sonya back, but it does provide some justice there for sure.
Yeah. Well, one big item that did not happen in Springfield this week, despite a visit from Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, lawmakers didn't have time or seemingly appetite to take up any questions of congressional redistricting. Do you think that's something we might see happen in Springfield soon?
I mean, we never rule anything out on these things, but no, I mean, we're not seeing that appetite is right.
I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah.
What you saw was a full court press of the D.C. Democrats and those trying to be very much on Hakeem Jeffries' side.
Yeah.
You had the Illinois Democratic congressional delegation in support. But let's also remember, too, four of them ain't going to be back.
Right, right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I do think there are some very valid issues about black representation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And in trying to pair off, I mean, they've squeezed about as much blood as you can. They did not expect to get 14 of the 17 seats under this map.
And, right.
And the winds blew right into that 14th district. To pull it in the 15, plus the legal ramifications of trying to make everybody perhaps redo petitions or pass a law that says for this election only for Congress, these petitions can go for districts that
sounds
may be
messy.
Totally different.
Right.
There's just a whole avenue and litany of legal issues. And as I talked to one lawyer, election law lawyer, they said, where were they 3 months ago?
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, before primary season starts.
Trump didn't make his threat.
True.
You know, I think that it's really a response to what he's doing, right?
Yeah, that was June when we had the Texas.
Ooh, Tom be flying.
Sorry, man, but yeah,
we did have time.
Yeah, but no, I mean, especially with you've already got 14, assuming those hold, you know, you maybe squeeze out one more seat. And we heard from, the Black Caucus in Springfield saying, if you're drawing these maps, any which way, it can really change the, the voters that make up that district.
And again, filing ends on Monday
for that
ballot.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in process.
Those Springfield lawmakers are not planning on coming back.
Right.
No.
Especially after that marathon.
Right. Right. Well, and there were all sorts of questions. Are they going to come back for a special session on transit when things were much more urgent?
I mean,
they didn't do that.
I mean, look, they're doing it back in January.
Right.
And that eases the vote requirement to do things. But even then, the clock is ticking to a March 17th primary that you're going to start messing around with stuff in January.
Good luck. All right, just about a minute left, but I want to mention that Illinois was part of this coalition suing to force SNAP benefits to continue, which a judge did just rule those should keep flowing. But, Brandon, do you think Republicans were hoping SNAP might be a pain point to get Democrats to cave on the shutdown here?
Absolutely. They were hoping that would be the case, and it still might be the case the longer this thing goes. I mean, this is unprecedented, what we're seeing. But this relief, that's not a lot of money. $20 million spread out amongst these food pantries.
From the state,
anything will help at this point.
Yeah. Well, anything that the four of you say will help us all get better informed, and you have done just that. But we are out of time. So our thanks to Madison Saavedra, Rick Pearson, Brandon Pope, and Olivia Olander. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that's our show for this Friday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, I wanted to talk about the Bears fumbling again, but my friend Rick here has a pressing question.
He's been stripped of the title of Prince. You
know, yes.
So is that evicted,
Prince Andrew,
right?
Yes.
So does that mean he's now known as, like, the symbol?
And, whoa, he should. Is it, the artist formerly known as Prince Andrew?
Yes. Oh,
that could
the
be
Prince
something. Yeah, I think the Paisley
I'm
Park
sorry,
is pretty litigious, so they may be coming after them.
You can bet. There'll be some purple rain.
We can still
falling.
Say, though, that yeah. there's 25 million, 20? You know, 600.
Oh, yeah, right. That was,
yeah, wait, we can still jump on the
I was going to say.
If you owe me $500, you want to give me five? Come on, bro. Come on. That's not, that's okay to do that.
But here's the
closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm that gives back to the community through law and philanthropy.